welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up in this hour, sitcoms. Later on, we hear Monty Woolley as the Magnificent Montague. Right now, it's The Life of Riley. Starring William Bendix, John Brown, Paula Winslow, and Barbara Eiler, this episode first heard on May 31st, 1947 on NBC.
The Life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley. Riley's boyfriend, Simon Vanderhopper, affects Chester Riley in the same way that a lighted match affects a firecracker. Riley has just heard that Simon plans to drop in tonight, so the firecracker is beginning to sputter.
Babs, didn't I tell you that good-for-nothing Simon can't come in this house till he gets a job?
But he's got a job. He sells novelties.
Some job. I've seen those novelties. Fake gardenias are sticking in your lapel and they squirt water.
Oh, is that what he's selling? Well, gosh, only a moron would buy junk like that.
Junior's right. Besides, that Simon is a crook. The one I bought from him don't work.
Well, it's just temporary till something better comes along.
Puppy rot.
Oh, relax, Riley.
Oh, that's easy for you to say, Peg. You're not a father.
Oh, Daddy, what have you got against Simon anyway?
I don't trust him. He's up to no good. He wants to marry you.
Me marry Simon? Oh, that's ridiculous. Simon and I are merely platonic friends.
That's what I thought I was when I ran around with your mother. But she didn't want to be friends. She wanted to be married.
Oh, is that so? Well, if
okay, let Simon come here tonight, but I'm going out.
Where?
Over to Maxie's Billiard Academy.
Riley, I've asked you a dozen times not to hang around that pool room.
Peg, that's a very high-class joint.
I just won't have it. Now promise me that you won't go into that pool room again. And if you break your word, I'll...
You'll leave me?
Yes. Yes, that's what I'll do.
You're kidding. Leave me? A husband with my personality? My looks? The kind of salary I make every... Okay, I won't shoot pool. I'll sit here and have my evening ruined by that sofa loafer.
Oh, stop picking on Simon. Maybe all the poor boy needs is some intelligent advice.
Well, he'll never get it from me. I'm not going to waste my time on that gardenia squirt.
Well, maybe you could help him a little. You know, put him on the right track.
Oh, he admires you so much, Daddy. He's always raving about your personality.
He's raving, huh? Well, that's only natural. I'm lovable.
You could make something out of that boy, Riley. He respects your opinion.
He does, huh? You know, that Simon's got a lot of stuff on the ball. Maybe that's why I've always been so fond of him.
Oh, that's Simon now.
Good. Come in, Simon, darling.
Thanks, Babs, sweetheart. Gee, Babs, your voice has changed. Oh, hello, Mr. Riley.
That was Daddy who said come in.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize. The only thing he ever says to me is get out.
Oh, well, that was the old Simon I was talking to. And we're burying him tonight.
Huh?
I'm thrilled you dropped in, Simon, my boy. Are you hungry?
Oh, yes, sir. I'm starving.
Well, we already ate dinner, but let me offer you a piece of advice. Simon, you got to get a good job.
Well, gee, I'd like to, but how?
Well, I'm going to get you a job. Now, leave everything to me. I'll dig around in my brain and come up with something concrete.
Oh, boy, that's terrific, Mr. Riley.
Junior, hand me the evening paper.
Here, Pop.
Oh, let's see. Oh, here's the one. Ed's...
Babsy, while they're going through the ads, we'll finish the dishes, huh?
Okay, Mother.
Oh, here's a good job, Simon.
Oh, read it, Mr. Riley, read it.
Young man wanted. Must be alert, ambitious, and intelligent. Well, let's try another one. Aha! Men wanted to sell insurance. Big income, great future, no experience necessary. Call Mr. Harris, manager, Paragon Mutual Accident and Life, Woodley, 2210.
Oh, boy, that sounds great. You think I can get the job?
Oh, no, maybe, if we go about it right. Business is all a matter of what connections you got. I wonder how we can get to this Mr. Harris.
Pop, why don't you merely...
Quiet, Junior. Now, if I knew the president of this insurance firm, I could get him to put pressure on Harris.
Yeah, but, Pop, all we have to do
Please,
is...
Junior. Now, if I knew someone who knew the president, I could get him to call the president and ask him to order Harris to hire you. This Harris is as stubborn as a mule.
Well, Pop, if you'd...
Junior, if you interrupt once more...
Okay.
Hey, I got it, Simon.
Yes, yes?
I once knew a fella, Joe Kaplan, in Philadelphia, who has a cousin who's a big insurance man in the Panama Canal Zone.
Hello, Mr. Harris, please.
Now, if I could only get Kaplan in Philadelphia to put pressure on his cousin...
I'm calling about your ad.
And then Kaplan's cousin in the Panama Canal Zone could write the president in Paragon and ask him to put pressure on Harris in Hollywood, then you got the job.
Yes, sir. Oh, thank you, sir.
That's it. Junior, get away from that phone. I got to call Kaplan in Philadelphia.
Hey, wait, Pop. I just called Mr. Harris. He says Simon's got a job and he starts tomorrow.
He does?
Oh, gee. Thanks, Mr. Riley. You put it over.
Oh, forget it, Simon. I was glad to do it. It's you, Gillis. Come on in.
Yeah, I saw your lights were still on. How's about a little gin rummy, Rennie?
Okay. But you owe me $210,000 from last night, Gillis.
Well, you was very lucky. You won both games. Hey, Riley, what's that red cycle on the calendar there, May 28th? Somebody having a birthday yesterday?
Oh, no. No, that's because yesterday was a big day. I finally got rid of that pest, Simon.
Yeah, what'd he do, elope with your daughter?
No. No, I got the little dope a job selling insurance. He'll be so busy getting thrown out of people's houses, he won't have time to come around here to be thrown out. You get it?
Smart, Riley. Smart. Well, deal the cards.
Yes, sir. I feel lucky tonight.
Good evening, Mr. Riley.
My luck has changed. Simon, what are you... Why aren't you working?
Oh, I am working, but I need your advice.
I'm very busy, Simon.
Oh, please, Mr. Riley. Can't you spare me a few pearls of wisdom?
Oh. Well, if it's pearls you want, I'm your oyster. Shoot, Simon.
Well, there's a certain prospect I want to sell an accident policy to. Only I'm afraid to ask him.
Well, now, Simon, in my opinion...
Why should you be afraid? Don't he need protection?
Yeah. Yeah, Gillis is right. Don't he need protection?
Oh, yes. He's got a wife and two children. And no accident insurance.
Well, you come to the right man for advice. Riley's got two kids, too. And no insurance, either.
No. Not a dime's worth.
I know.
Simon, this prospect that you got owes it to his family to buy protection.
That's right. He owes it to him.
After all, how much can this insurance cost?
Yeah, how much can it cost?
Only $12 a year. This is the policy right here.
Only $12? That's a bargain.
Why, it's a steal.
A guy with a family be selfish to turn down a policy like this.
Selfish? He'd be a monster.
Simon, you ask this guy right away.
Sure, Simon. Why, if it was me, I'd sign in a minute.
Here's a pen.
Where do I sign?
On the dotted line.
Chester A. Raddick. There.
Wait a minute. Give me back my signature.
Hey, what's the matter, Riley? You look petite. Still sore because Simon stuck you with that insurance policy?
Nah, it was worth $12 to get rid of that pest. But last night I had a little argument with the missus.
Wives is all alike. Yep, yep, yep. What was it about?
No, she found out I've been dropping into the pool room again on my way home from work.
Just like a woman. Begrudging a hard-working man a little athletics.
That's what I said, but Peg wanted me to promise on my word of honor as a gentleman that I wouldn't shoot pool again.
So what'd you do?
Well, what could I do? I'm always willing to make my wife happy, so I promised. Well, 8-ball in the side pocket.
Hey, good shot.
Listen, Gillis. If Peg finds out I was here, I'm sunk. She's got a temper. Why, she's liable to leave me and go home to her mother.
Oh, don't worry. I won't snitch. I wish my wife would go home to her mother. And take her mother with her.
9-ball in the corner pocket.
Hey, you'll never make it from that angle. You couldn't reach that ball if you had a 12-foot cue.
Don't worry. Watch me.
Hey, Riley, you're climbing up on a table.
Who's climbing? climb and I just got my left knee up.
Yeah, but your right foot's in the pocket.
That's okay. I know what I'm doing. Now. Oh, my ankle!
Now you've done it. Here, let me help you.
Hey, what's the matter here?
The clock fell off of the table. Help me get him up, Maxie.
Okay, come on.
There. Now drag him to that chair.
Maxie,
hold it. What's the matter, Riley?
My foot!
Well, what about it?
It's still in the pocket!
Riley, what happened?
How did you get hurt, Pop?
I couldn't get a word out of Gillis. He just dumped you on the porch and ran away.
Well, Peggy, it was this way. Gillis and me were... Uh-oh.
I always told you to be careful at the plant.
The plant? But it happened when I was trying to... I climbed up on the... I got my foot... Oh, you're right. I knew that plant would get me into trouble.
Gee, your foot's swollen, Daddy.
Yeah, take off my shoe, Junior.
Well, I'll have to cut your shoelace.
No, don't cut them. Those shoelaces cost money. Well, don't stand there. Do something. Get some hot water.
Oh, yes, Daddy.
Get the iodine.
I'll get it.
What a tragedy. I'll be laid up for a week. They'll dock my salary.
But don't worry. You've got an accident policy.
That's right. Simon insured me. Well, don't stand there,
Peg. They're getting the iodine.
Never mind the iodine. Get me the policy. And call up Simon. Tell him to bring the money.
Here's the iodine, Pop.
Paint my foot. Take a brush.
Yeah, but I can't untie this lace.
Well, cut it off. Don't worry. I'm insured. Cut the shoe off, too. And if you have to, cut the pants leg.
Okay. Pop, you'll have to move your other leg. It's in the way.
I'm insured. Don't move it. Cut it off.
Come in, Simon.
I ran over as soon as I got your call, Mr. Riley.
Did you bring the money?
Well, no. First, you have to file a claim. But don't worry. My company will pay you every cent this accident cost you.
Now, you see, you worried over nothing.
Well, here's a list of my expenses, Simon. Comes to $136.
$136? For just a sprained ankle?
Well, sure, I got it all itemized. 1 week's salary when I'm laid up, one pair of shoes I had to cut off, one pair of pants, iodine, adhesive tape, hot water, taxi fare, $12.
$12?
I'm a big tipper.
Now, wait a minute, Riley.
Peg, it's my ankle.
Okay, leave it in. Our company gives every claim, small or large, the most serious consideration. Now, just sign here.
There you are.
Fine. Well, I better get down to the office. By the way, there's just one little detail. Where did this accident occur?
In my ankle.
No, I mean what place?
You have to know that?
Of course he does. It happened at the plant, Simon.
Well, the fact is that...
At the plant. Yes. Well, that's different.
I get double?
No, you don't get anything at all.
Simon, what are you saying?
According to this policy, the company does not have to pay any damages for accidents that occur at work.
Here
it is, in black and white, clause 397. Read it yourself.
Let me see that.
Right there. Here, use my magnifying glass.
The company is not liable for...
But you've got nothing to worry about, Mr. Riley. Your plant has a policy covering all employees.
Why, that's right.
Yeah, but you see, I didn't...
I happen to know about it because my company insures your plant. So I'll just file this claim you signed under the plant policy.
Oh, no, you mustn't.
But why not? You were hurting the plant, weren't you?
No. I mean, yes. I mean...
Relax, Mr. Riley. As soon as I file this claim, you're going to get everything that's coming to you.
What a revolting development this is.
Oh, what's the matter, dear? Does your ankle hurt?
Well, no, Peg. Why?
Well, you've got a look of agony on your face.
Oh, well, I'm thinking.
Daddy, stop worrying about that insurance. Simon phoned a little while ago and said he'd be over.
Simon, it's coming here? I'm going for a walk. Hand me my crutches.
You stay and wait for him. He probably has a check with him.
I don't want the money.
You don't? What are you talking about?
Well, why be greedy? I don't want to take advantage of the poor little insurance company.
Poor? Daddy, that company's got at least $10 million. Your claim is only $136.
Well, I hate to annoy their bookkeeper.
Riley, when you fell, did you land on your head? I never heard of such...
Oh, that must be Simon.
Hello, folks. Hiya, Babs.
Hello.
Well, Mr. Riley, congratulations are in order.
You brought my check?
No, I got a raise, thanks to you. Oh, things are popping. Everybody down at the insurance company is talking about you.
They're mad?
Mad? They love you. They could kiss you. Here, have a cigar. Oh. Compliments of the manager, Mr. Harris.
Simon, I don't understand. What happened?
Well, I filed that claim that Mr. Riley signed as an industrial accident. But it turned out that his boss, Mr. Stevenson, didn't report it when it happened.
He didn't?
No, and that means that the policy covering the plant is subject to immediate cancellation.
Well, that's good, huh?
Yes, sir. That's just what my company wants. They're losing a fortune on this deal with Stevenson, and now they can get out of it.
All on account of my little ankle.
Yes, sir. My company's got your boss in the worst jam he's ever been in. Thanks to you.
Out with nothing.
I saw Stevenson this morning. Why, Stevenson was screaming and yelling, trying to find out why the accident wasn't reported. He's phoning up people left and right and firing them.
Riley, it's Mr. Stevenson.
I don't want to talk to him. Tell him we ain't got a phone.
Oh. Riley. You've got to talk to him.
Well, hello, boss. What's new? But, boss, But my ankle... Okay, goodbye. He wants me there right away.
But what did he say about your ankle?
He said to bring my crutches. When he gets through with me, I'm going to need them. Oh, life is very confusing. Yesterday I had a job. Today maybe I'll be fired. Who knows what'll happen tomorrow?
Going my way.
Who's that?
It is I, Digby O'Dell, the friendly undertaker. Greetings, Riley. You're looking fat. You look horrible.
I got this here sprained ankle, and I bought a policy and...
Policy?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a coincidence. I'm on the board of the UELIS.
UELIS?
The Undertakers and Embalmers Life Insurance Society. We have only one policy. We cover you completely.
On account of this accident, my boss is mad at me. I shouldn't have said it happened at the plant.
Well, didn't it?
No, it was in a pool room. And if my wife hears about that, I'll never get straightened out.
Yes, you will in time. But first, go to your boss. Tell him the truth.
You mean you want me to dig my own grave?
That'll never happen while I'm around. Now do as I say. Pronto.
I guess you're right, Digger. Honest, I'm so mixed up. If I was a drinking man, I'd go drown my troubles.
Perish the thought. The curse of John Barleycorn can be disastrous. Take the case of my friend, D.T. McVicar, whose epitaph read, "Here lies McVicar, a lover of liquor, who said to himself, how a drink, shun. So he drank up a cask. What happened? Don't ask. Now he's this month's man of extinction." Well, cheerio. I'd better be shoveling off.
You
listen to me, Stevenson.
And you listen to me, Harris.
I repeat, Stevenson, when that Riley accident was not reported, it was a clear violation, and my company has a legal right to cancel your factory's group insurance.
You'll never get away with it, Harris. Let me tell you that... Yes, Willie?
Mrs. Riley to see you.
Mrs. Riley? All right, send her in. Harris, would you mind waiting in the next office?
Very well.
Come in.
Mr. Stevenson, I
Mrs. Can't... Riley, where's your husband?
Well, he was afraid to come, so I thought if I could...
What do you mean, afraid to come? I've got to find out why this accident wasn't reported properly. No one knows anything about it. I'm beginning to doubt it ever happened here.
Oh, no, it happened here, all right. Riley told me. He wouldn't lie.
Then I'm sunk. They'll cancel. When I find out who's responsible... Yes?
Mr. Riley is here to see you.
Send him in. I want to see your husband alone. Please wait in the next office.
Oh, certainly.
Come in.
Hello, boss. What's new?
You blithering idiot. Do you realize all the trouble you're causing?
But, boss, the accident...
This is the last accident you'll have in this plant. You're fired.
But, boss, the accident didn't happen here. It happened in a pool room.
That's no excuse. You were... Did you say pool room?
Well, yeah. I haven't had an accident in the plant since 3 years ago when I got my head caught in a time clock.
Why, Riley, that's wonderful. I'm going to give you a raise for this.
A raise? Gee, thanks, boss.
Now, step in here with me and tell Mr. Harris about the pool room.
Oh, sure.
Harris, here's Riley. Go on, Riley. Tell him where the accident happened.
Well, sure, it happened in the... Oh, hello, Peg. It happened in the... Peg! What are you doing?
Go on, Riley. Tell Harris where it happened.
In the plant.
Where?
In the pool room.
Where?
In the plant.
What?
The pool room. The plant.
Riley, you're fired.
Do I still get my raise?
Get out of here.
No, wait, boss. I'll confess. It happened in the pool room.
The pool room?
Yes. I'm sorry, Peg, but that's the truth.
Well, Harris, try and cancel now.
Just a minute, Stevenson. You don't expect me to believe the testimony of this...
Idiot?
Oh, then you're not mad at me, Peg.
You're going to have to prove this, Stevenson.
But that's where it happened, I swear.
Mr. Stevenson, the new rivets we got... Oh, excuse
Gillis.
Me.
Gillis, tell him. Tell him where I sprained my ankle. You were there.
You witnessed the accident?
Saw the whole thing.
Then where did it happen, Gillis?
Why, it happened in... Oh, hello, Mrs. Riley. It happened... Mrs. Riley! It happened in the plant. So help me.
But Gillis showed you. He's lying. He's trying to protect me from my wife. I can prove it happened in the pool room. Come with me. Give me one more chance before you hang me.
Hey, Maxie.
Yeah, Joe?
Look out the window. Look who's coming here.
Hey, that's Riley with two guys.
Yeah, they look like detectives. And that lady with them looks like a plainclothes man.
But say, I don't like this. I don't want no trouble. Joe, anything I say, you back me up.
Okay, boss.
This is the place. Hello, Joe. Hello, Maxie. Maxie, this is Mr. Stevenson.
Hiya.
Hiya. This is Mr. Harris.
Hiya.
And this is Mrs. Riley.
Hiya.
Well, that settles everything.
Except one thing.
What's that?
Who are you?
What? You mean you don't know this man?
Never saw him before in my life.
Maxie, it's me, Riley. I was shooting pool. Remember, I sprained this ankle...
I never saw your ankle before.
Well, come along, Harris. You win. As for you, Riley...
No, wait. Honest, it happened right here, right at this table. The number 9 ball was over here. But I couldn't reach it, so I got up on a table like this, and then I made the shot like this. Oh, my ankle!
Riley, dear, are you hurt?
I sprained my good ankle.
So that's how it happened.
Well, Stevenson, I guess Riley was telling the truth. Let's forget about the matter.
Oh, my poor ankles.
Well, I'm sorry about your ankles, dear. But maybe this will be a lesson to you. Never tell lies to your wife.
You're right, Duncan. That's a lesson for all married men. If they tell lies, they'll wind up like me, without a leg to stand on.
Rallies will return in a moment.
Why did you let matters go so far? Why didn't you say from the very beginning it happened in the pool room?
Well, I was afraid maybe you'd leave me.
Oh, Riley, you ought to know I'd never leave you. You ought to know why, too.
You couldn't find an apartment?
Oh. No, you big goose. Because I love you.
Oh, Dumplin'. I never knew you cared.
And Gamble, makers of Dress, the sudsing miracle for soaps, nylons, woolens, dishes, invite you to be their guests next week to hear The Life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley. William Bendix can currently be seen in the Paramount picture Calcutta. The Life of Riley is produced by Irving Brecker and is directed by Don Bernard. Music by Lou Kozloff. The script was written by Alan Lipscott, Reuben Shipp, and Jack Brecker. Mrs. Riley is Paula Winslow, Digger Odell is John Brown, Babs is Barbara Eiler, Junior is Tommy Cook, Simon is Warren Mills, Stevenson is Ken Christie, and Maxie is Buddy Gray. This is Ken Carpenter inviting you to listen again next week to The Life of Riley and reminding you, for faster, brighter, safer cleaning than any previous suds in history, use Dress. Don't get left, get Dress.
The Life of Riley, on Tuned to Yesterday from May 31st, 1947 on NBC. The program had been on the air for 4 years at that point, drawing over 15 million listeners a week, Saturday nights at 8 o'clock. It's an hour of sitcoms on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now a short-lived series from NBC. It's The Magnificent Montague, only on for one season, but a funny one with Monty Woolley, a star, from February 16th, 1951.
It's the Magnificent Montague. When Edwin the Magnificent Montague left the Shakespearean stage to become Uncle Goodhart, star of an afternoon radio program, he felt his downfall was complete. But today, with a radio salary check coming in regularly, good food on the table, his thoughts of ever returning to his beloved stage grow dimmer and dimmer. It is breakfast time in the Montague apartment. Lily, Edwin's wife and former leading lady, is setting the table. And Agnes, the Montague maid, is in the kitchen preparing the master's morning meal. Something is burning.
What's that? Agnes!
What is it, honey?
Agnes, is something burning?
I can't hear
you. I asked, is something burning?
What is it, honey? I couldn't hear you. I'm in the middle of cooking the magnificent monster's breakfast.
Is something burning?
Naturally, I said I was cooking his breakfast.
Is his toast ready?
Almost. It's on the floor. All I have to do is stamp out the flame.
Oh, Agnes, I wish you'd pay a little more attention to Edwin's breakfast. It's his first meal.
For 25 years, I've been trying to make it his last.
Oh, now, really, Agnes. Uh-oh, Edwin's coming.
Now comes the throat warming up. Thank you, Mario Lanza.
Good morning there. Something's burning.
It's just a toast.
Oh, for a moment, I thought Agnes got her head caught in the oven.
If it happened to you, you could always grow another head.
I would like to grow another foot, and I know just where I would put it.
Oh, please, can't we have one morning without these arguments? Now bring in Edwin's breakfast.
Okay. Where do I put on my rubber gloves?
Lily, Agnes looks a little run down. Why don't you take her down to a filling station for a spring checkup?
Now, Edwin.
Oh, nothing serious. Just have her oil changed and put some air in her head.
Stop. Read the newspaper. Here's the drama section.
Drama section? What possibly could be happening in the theater now that I'm not in it? Give me the radio section. There might be something about my Uncle Goodhart program.
Here. After what the theater meant to us, how you could lose interest in it.
Lily, the theater is dead. It is now nothing but a hobby for television actors.
Right, Edwin. Read your radio section. I'll read the drama page. Edwin, listen. Something about Max Garland, who used to produce all your Shakespearean plays.
Oh, the great impresario. What is Max the Moron up to now?
Listen, it says Max Garland, one of Broadway's most beloved producers.
Beloved? That's a newspaper word for no talent.
Has just been made casting director for Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Well, they've seen their last hit.
Oh, I'm so glad for Max. Listen to this. Garland is already at work choosing actors for the touring company of Rodgers and Hammerstein's great musical South Pacific.
They're letting Max Garland pick a road company, eh? When he gets through, Rodgers and Hammerstein will have to hit the road. Lily, why are you wasting my time with these tidbits of trivia?
Trivia? Edwin, the theater used to be our lives. When you took the job in radio, it was just something temporary until you could get a good role on the stage.
Lily, the theater is dead. Let's face it. Radio's the coming thing. It's young and alive.
Here's your breakfast, Henry Aldrich.
Ah, really, Agnes? With meat prices the way they are, why don't you go out and have your tongue pickled?
Edwin, you'll be late for your broadcast, so eat your breakfast.
Yeah, eat your breakfast. I got a bet writing that says you can't get it down.
Agnes, leave him alone. So Edwin, eat your breakfast.
Let Agnes eat it.
You should live so long.
Oh, this has been a great morning.
Where's my hat? Goodbye, Lily.
Edwin, won't you just phone Max and congratulate him?
Lily, I'm through with the theater. Finished. Oh, by the way, catch my Uncle Goodhart program. Today, I nurse a cocker spaniel back to health. Ah, then it opens its eyes and sees me. It's the best thing I've ever done. Goodbye.
I gotta catch that program when the cocker spaniel opens its eyes and sees him. Should be interesting to listen to a dog go mad from coast to coast.
Oh, Agnes, Agnes. Do you realize what's happening to my husband? He's lost his interest in the theater. He's not planning on ever going back to it.
That's the first good news the theater's had in years.
Nonsense. If he was offered a good part in a play that would stimulate his interest, he... Agnes, where's my coat?
Where are you going?
To the Rodgers and Hammerstein office. I'm going to see Max Garland.
No, Miss Kovac, I can't audition any more people. If there's anybody out there, please tell... What? Who? Mrs. Montague? Send her right in. Gad, I haven't seen Lily. Lily!
Hello, Max.
Look at her, beautiful as ever. Who would think that for the last 25 years you've been married to the thing?
Oh, Max, I just dropped by to congratulate you on your new job. How do you like it?
Like it? It's like a vacation.
A vacation?
After 15 years with your husband, working in a salt mine would be a vacation.
Oh, now, Max, let's not start getting excited again.
You're right, Lily. It's past and gone. 15 years of producing plays starring your husband.
Yes, the years just went.
Yes, and my stomach went with them. Lily, my picture's been in the medical journal. I had a new disease, Montague-itis.
Oh, easy, Max.
Do you know what Montague-itis is, Lily? Beards before your eyes. You come home to kiss your wife, she's wearing a beard. Your baby has a beard. Your dog has a beard.
I couldn't take it anymore, Lily. I couldn't take it.
Oh, Max.
I'm sorry, Lily, but just talking about it brought back the old symptoms that... Why, Lily.
What, Max?
What a lovely beard.
Oh, stop it, Max. Let's talk about you. I read that you're cast in the touring company of South Pacific for Rodgers and Hammerstein.
It's a cinch. Every actor in town wants to play the French planter, the part Ezio Pinza plays.
Oh, you have to be careful who you get for that.
You're telling me.
And that's the part that calls for a great actor. He must be elderly, but yet have that mature appeal.
That's right.
He must know how to speak French.
I know.
He must have a reputation on the stage to be able to be an attraction.
Pretty tough.
Max, it just came to me.
What?
Max, there's only one man in the world who could play that part.
Who?
Edwin Montague.
Ah!
Max!
Lily, I'm on the road back to health. I can't take jokes like that.
Max, I'm serious. You're working for Rodgers and Hammerstein. Now, their success has been based on throwing away convention and being daring.
What do you mean?
Look at South Pacific. They took H.C.O. Pinza, an opera star, and put him in a musical comedy.
So?
So you can be just as daring by taking Edwin Montague, the greatest living Shakespearean actor, and putting him in South Pacific.
Edwin Montague in South Pacific? The whole idea's crazy.
Well, maybe it is. But think, Max. What if it works?
Yeah, what if it works? Oh, no, Lily.
Jack, he has the voice, the bearing, the experience.
Lily.
It's a daring move in the tradition of Rodgers and Hammerstein, and you thought of it, Max.
I thought of it.
He has a name, people. Remember, think of the critics who love him, the box office.
Coming. Oh, it's you.
Hello, Agnes. Where's Lily?
She's out.
Where'd she go?
Who knows? Reno, if she's smart.
Agnes, why don't you surprise us for Mother's Day and quit? By the way, did you hear my Uncle Goodhart broadcast this afternoon?
Yeah. I gotta admit, it was sensational.
Well, not bad, eh?
That last speech, when the Cocker Spaniel opened his eyes.
Now, you mean, life is back, little one. Once more to see the sun come up, the trees, the flowers, the open sky.
That's it.
Best speech I ever had to say.
Oh, did you say it? I thought it was the Cocker Spaniel.
Agnes, would you be interested in a proposition whereby your day off becomes permanent? Why my wife insists on having you in the house? That must be Lily.
I'll get it.
Hello, Agnes.
Hello, honey.
Oh, Edwin, you're back from the broadcast.
Don't get near him. He may have fleas.
Hello, Lily. Close the door.
Wait, I have a surprise for you.
A surprise?
Yes. Come in, Max.
Hello, Edwin.
Oh, no. Hello, Max.
That sounds like Mr. Gimble meeting Mr. Macy.
Well, let's sit down. We have so much to talk about.
Have we?
Oh, Edwin, we have good news for you.
You have?
Max has a wonderful idea.
You have?
Now, Edwin, you listen. Max is here to offer you one of the greatest starring roles on Broadway.
A starring role, Max?
Yeah.
Edwin, this is something new. A character that just fits you.
He's an elderly man.
Elderly?
But with great charm, sex appeal, savoir faire.
Really?
Continental type. Talks French.
Talks French? Bon appétit, monsieur, au ministre d'intègre. Conti vertueux. Voilà le professeur.
Translation, your father's mustache.
What's the name of the play, Max?
South Pacific.
Never heard of it. Who wrote it?
Oh. Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Never heard of them.
Oh, Edwin, you've been away too long.
What is it? Drama? Melodrama? Tragedy?
Well, Edwin...
Yes?
It's a musical comedy. You know, singing and dancing.
Singing and dancing.
Excuse me, I have a pretzel in the oven.
Now, Edwin.
Max Garland, leave this house.
Edwin, listen.
He wasn't content to have brought my Shakespearean career to an untimely end. He now wants me to end my days as a chorus boy.
Edwin, you're being ridiculous. Now, Max.
I'm starting to see beards again.
Edwin, it's a play that won the Pulitzer Prize.
Lily, I don't care. The Pulitzer Prize?
Montague, it's a play with great depth and feeling.
The part you play made Pinza the biggest star on Broadway.
Yeah, it made a star out of an opera singer. Imagine what I could do with it when I give it the famous Montague touch.
Better known as the kiss of death.
Edwin, we have no time to lose. You must study the part so that when Max takes you to the director, nothing can go wrong.
Musical comedy with my voice and sex appeal. Gad, the years I wasted doing Shakespeare.
Back with the magnificent Montague in just a moment. And now back to the magnificent Montague. Theatrical history is in the making. Montague, the bulwark of the Shakespearean theater, is preparing himself to take over the Ezio Pinza role of the French planter in South Pacific. He is rehearsing.
Dites-moi. Pourquoi la vie est belle? be again. Vive le roi. Au revoir, chère mademoiselle. Est-ce que, parce que, vous m'aimez.
Oh, Edwin, lovely. That was lovely, wasn't it, Agnes?
Harry Como ain't going to lose any sleep.
Edwin, it sounds wonderful.
It does, doesn't it?
Why, at times you sound just like Tinza.
When Tinza has laryngitis.
Hey, call one of the elevator boys and have him walk Agnes.
Now, remember, Edwin, when Max takes you to meet Rogers and Hammerstein's director, Mr. Brooks, please... Oh, that's Max.
I'll let him in. Hi, Max.
Hello, Agnes.
Hello, Max. Edwin already knows the part, even the song.
He does, huh?
Would you like to hear me sing a few of the songs, Max?
No. I'll hear you at the audition later, sort of get it all in one lump.
Well, we better get going. Is everything arranged, Max?
Yeah, the director, Benton Brooks, is expecting us. He'll have a piano player there.
I'll get it. The residence of A.C.O. Montague, hello? Who? No kidding. When'd you get into town? Sure, come right up. Oh, stop that. All right, here. What? Can't you at least wait until you get up here? No, I won't run away.
What a disgusting exhibition. Who was that, Agnes?
Your father.
Oh! Oh, no. What is he doing in town?
Old Cyril Montague? Is he still around? He must be pushing 200.
And a girl still isn't safe around him.
Let's slip out the back door.
Edwin, he's your father.
And the retired and undefeated monarch of the Shakespearean stage.
Let's get out of here. Lily, he just lives to make trouble for me.
Edwin, I just like to stay and say hello to old Cyril. It'll be fun.
Max, do you remember how much fun it was when he'd drop in the middle of our rehearsal, telling me how to act, you how to produce, the director how to direct?
I remember. Where's the back door?
Well, there he is.
Oh, we're trapped.
I'll get the door. Hello, Mr. Montague.
Agnes, my passion flower. Come here, you lovely wench. Give me a kiss.
Oh, let me go. Let me go. Oh, he pinched me.
Hello, Dad.
Yes, Lily. You get more ravishing every day. Kiss me, you little devil.
Watch him, honey. He pinches like a lobster.
Dad, you remember Max Garland?
Hello, Cyril.
Yeah, Max, are you still alive? Yeah. Well, where's Edwin? Where's that boy of mine? Oh, hello, Garland. Hello, Father. It's awfully nice of you to drop here.
Hello, Father. It's awfully nice of you to drop here.
Half my life I spent trying to teach him how to talk like an actor, and what comes out?
Hello, Father. Awfully nice of you.
Please, Dad, don't stop that again.
Oh, leave Edwin alone, Dad. This is a big day for him. He's going to audition for a part in a play.
The Montague has to audition? Isn't the name of Montague enough to get the part?
Oh, Dad.
For five generations, Montagues have refused to audition in order to get a part. Some never worked a day in their lives, but they never audition. Lily, try and explain.
Dad, this is a very important role. It's completely different from any role he's ever played.
Different?
Yes. It's called South Pacific.
South Pacific? Egad, they've discovered a new play by Shakespeare.
Dad, South Pacific has nothing to do with Shakespeare.
A Montague in a play that has nothing to do with Shakespeare?
Dad, if you'll let me...
Hush! Mind your manners, son. Lily, if this South Pacific is not by Shakespeare, what is it?
Well, Dad, times have changed.
Come. What is it?
A musical comedy.
Huh?
Agnes! Agnes, get some water.
Never mind. I'm all right. It's just that it's hard for a father to face the fact that his son is a no-talent bum.
Please, Father.
Don't go, please, Father. A Montague.
in a musical comedy.
Father.
Let me go. From this day on, I shall wear a black band on my sleeve. My son is dead.
Mr. Montague, South Pacific.
Get away from me, Mac. There's blood on your hands. You took my Edwin, a clean American boy, and led him astray.
But, Mr. Montague, if you...
Quiet! Throwing my boy, a Montague, on a stage to dance and sing with half-naked hussies.
Now, Dad, this is ridiculous. South Pacific is a beautiful and dramatic production.
Don't tell me about musical comedies. I've seen all of them. The Floridora Sextet, Madcap Mitzi, Sliding Billy Watson's Beef Truss Girls, Getting Gertie's Garter, those hussies in tights kicking and carrying on in the... That is not for my boy.
Dad, if you'd only see for yourself.
Yes, Mr. Montague, here's a ticket for today's matinee of South Pacific. You'll see what we mean.
Yes, Daddy, you just...
Yes, Daddy, you just...
Dad, what a stupid brat.
Now, look, Father, nobody asked for your advice in the first place. I'm old enough to make up my own mind. I don't need any help from you.
Talking to your father like that.
Edwin, go to your room.
Now, wait a minute. They're waiting to hear him audition.
Let's go.
Oh, believe me, Dad, it's the right thing for Edwin. Now, you take that ticket and see South Pacific. We'll meet you here for dinner.
For 96 years, I've kept the name of Montague clean. And now my own son, in a musical comedy. He'll send me to an early grave.
Agnes. Come in, gentlemen.
I told you, Max, it was a ridiculous idea. Montague in a musical comedy.
It was an idea. We'll find something for you, won't we, Brooks?
Oh, definitely. But for South Pacific, you must admit, Mr. Montague, the role calls for...
Well, I know. A much younger man.
Edwin, I hope you're not disappointed.
Well, a little, Lily. But it would have been ridiculous. Those love scenes. It would have been unbelievable. A young girl singing to me, I gotta wash that man right out of my hair.
Awfully nice of you to invite me up for dinner to meet the great Cyril Montague. He was my boyhood idol.
But Dad should be back from seeing South Pacific.
Where did you hear what he says about your South Pacific? He won't be your idol anymore.
Dad's of the old school.
And so am I, Lily. He's right. Montague means Shakespeare.
That's the old man.
Get ready for some snarling criticism.
Hello, Dad.
Some enchanted evening. He will meet a stranger.
Dad, how'd you like the show?
Bally High will call you. Bally High.
Father, don't tell me you like South Pacific.
Liked it? It's the greatest show I've ever seen. And to think my son will star in it.
That's just it, Dad. I'm not in it.
You're not in it?
You were right. Musical comedy isn't for me.
Then what is for you? Heavens knows Shakespeare wasn't. I remember you. To be or not to be, that is the question of all. I still get nauseous when I think of it.
Will you please stop? It wasn't because of my acting. It is too old for the part.
Too old? An actor is never too old.
Well, this particular part calls
for... No matter what it calls for, it can be altered.
Altered?
Egad, I played Huckleberry Finn at the age of 63. I made a few slight changes. I merely made Huckleberry Finn a fun-loving middle-aged boy.
Nonsense.
Nonsense, is it?
But, Mr. Montague, South Pacific can't be changed now.
Who is this man?
Dad, this is Mr. Benton Brooks, who's directing the auditions for South Pacific.
Mr. Montague, this is the proudest moment of my life. I never dreamed I'd ever meet my idol.
Mr. Brooks, you have a very good show there. But if you'll step into Edwin's den with me for a few moments, I think I could show you with a few little changes. You'll excuse us, please.
Of course, Dad.
Gosh, who'd ever think I'd be talking to Cyril Montague?
This way. Now, take that sensible character.
Oh, Edwin, your father just won't give up.
Trying to change South Pacific.
Oh. Well, Lily, don't laugh.
Oh, but Edwin, Brooks isn't going to change a play that's been a smash hit for years.
That's not it, Lily. Do you realize what's happening? My father, first time in his life, is doing something for me. He's fighting for me. Lily, a thought just struck me. It frightens me.
Well, what is it, Edwin?
Lily, I think my father likes me.
Oh. Of course he does.
Here they come.
Max, get Rogers and Haberstein on the phone at once.
But what?
Don't ask questions. Get them on the phone. Mr. Montague, it's amazing that we never saw it that way.
Well, you were so close to the play.
What is it? Just 2 minutes with your father and I found out what was wrong with South Pacific.
Something is wrong with South Pacific?
Wrong? It's glaring. The central character, the French planter, is wrong. He should be an old hermit.
That's me. The way the part is now, I'm not too old for it.
The way the part is now, you're too young.
Too young? But the way you described the character,
there was only one man who could possibly play it.
Younger than springtime.
Father, you wouldn't take the part.
He isn't getting it. I just phoned. The part's already been cast.
Well, Father, aren't you ashamed of yourself?
Edwin, it's time you learn. You come from an acting family, and to an actor, a good part is thicker than blood.
That's my part.
The Magnificent Montague, on Tuned to Yesterday from February 16th, 1951 on NBC. And that brings to a close this hour of sitcoms on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.